you're sick of hearing the anti-white message, then you've come to the right place. You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Welcome to the Stormer Report. Today's date is the 29th of August 2016 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Once again today, I'm joined by Lee Rogers from Infostormer.com. How are you doing today, Lee?
Hey Sven, I'm doing well. How are you?
Yeah, really good. I mean, we've had such a lot of good news for once. Really good news. Hillary Clinton seeding our memes at her speech last week. We've got some good news to finish up with today. We've got this governor in Maine who's really been speaking the truth bravely and courageously about black on white crime. It's just lots of good news all around, which makes a really nice change from covering these terrorist attacks, these Muslim terrorist attacks that we've been having in Europe. So it's great to have to have what seems like it's going to be a particularly positive podcast today. And I think the first thing we should really start with is some analysis of Clinton's speech last week, where she mentioned the alt-right. And I think you're probably the best person to start that off with, Lee.
Yeah, sure. So this has been quite the crazy week, to say the least. And one of the biggest news stories, as you mentioned, was Hillary's speech that pretty much focused in on the alternative right. And really, I mean, this put, I would say, everything we've been doing online in the mainstream media spotlight, probably more so than anything else that I can remember in recent history. So what's happened is that she came out and just attacked Donald Trump and specifically associate him with the alt-right. And the resulting media coverage was extremely expansive. I mean, there were so many segments that were run on this. People trying to explain what the alt-right is. People complaining about how there are all these mean people out there saying all these mean things about Jews, non-whites, and so forth and so on. But what was really interesting that I thought about the whole thing was how the Jewish-controlled media tried to spin this whole thing to say, okay, well, the leader of this alt-right movement is not somebody who has a worldview that is anti-Jewish and is really trying to push the Jewish question really hard. Instead, they're trying to associate the alt-right with this homosexual Jew by the name of Milo Yiannopoulos. And I'm sure most people listening to this are very familiar with who he is. And he's basically this homosexual Jew that claims the alt-right is just a bunch of people who don't really dislike what the Jews are doing. They're just having fun. They're just joking around. And the whole thing is ridiculous because, I mean, a lot of us are doing this because we're hoping to achieve a specific political outcome. We're trying to use humor. We're trying to use things that draw people's attention to what is obviously a very important problem. We have a number of subversive Jews who are in our countries doing a lot of bad things, whether it's in the media, whether it's in the banking system, whether it's in corporations, whether it's in politics. We see these Jews that are doing all these things. So this is not something we're doing just for a joke. This is a legitimate political movement, and I would say we've had some fantastic results with the fact that Hillary Clinton spent 30 minutes of her time delivering a speech largely on this topic. And I mean, she's a presidential candidate, a major presidential candidate for a major party. She barely does any speeches. I mean, there's all sorts of questions about her health. I mean, and then of course you got the Clinton Foundation scandal, the email scandal, all the corruption. So her appearances are purposely kept to a minimum. So for her to do this, I think is an incredibly significant moment for what we've been doing over the past several years. And in particular, it shows that just this activity alone has had more of an impact in just a short period of time than the prior decades that people have been doing this. So I think it was a very significant moment. And one thing that was really funny during her speech, that there was somebody who was in the audience of her speech, and after she mentioned the term alt-right, and somebody in the audience yelled Pepe as loud as they could. And Pepe is like this frog cartoon that has been incorporated in a lot of these alt-right memes. So she got trolled pretty bad on that one. So a lot of very positive stuff with what happened. And I don't think Hillary or her advisors know exactly what they unleashed by delivering that speech, because they just drew a ton of attention on what we're doing. And overall, that was a tremendous positive for everything we're doing, and it's going to be a tremendous positive moving forward.
Well, if you think about how long people have been trying to see the white genocide meme and get that into public consciousness by mentioning it all the time, and that's been going on for years. And you think since the alt-right really took off with Twitter and with trolling, it has only been the last 2 years. And yet, thanks to all that Twittering and trolling and the Stormer Troll Army, it succeeded in getting white genocide mentioned in Hillary Clinton's speech. So it's now inside the minds of millions of people. And that's a total vindication, I think, for the tactics that have been used, which a lot of people were criticizing when these tactics first started to be used with these extreme tweets and the gas chamber jokes and all this sort of thing. People were really criticizing that and saying, oh, this is going to turn people off. But it succeeded in doing what people have been wanting to do for years, which is to get these words out there so that it's in people's minds, so that they then want to find out what it's actually about, what it actually means. And as you say, there's been loads of people discussing this, talking about this, trying to define what the alt-right is. I mean, I would say the alternative right, I mean, what is right, the true right, has now become left. The what was right has now become left. So the true right has now become the alternative, because we are the truth, and we represent the natural order and the eternal truth that's behind everything, behind all of creation. And it basically boils down to the natural order, which is tradition, which is marrying one of people of your own kind, not engaging in perverted sexual acts, having respect for your ancestors, having respect for the land that you live on, and making things better for your descendants, the same as your ancestors did for you. It's not hard. I think that's what the alt-right is about, and it's about getting that out there and getting that message out there in any way possible. And thanks to Twitter, thanks to the advances made on the internet in the last just recent couple of years, with the improving in podcasting, improving in videos that have been made, Dennis Wise's documentary. It's also, obviously, it's also about promoting the National Socialist ideals, but National Socialist ideals just go back to the natural order. Again, it's just natural, traditional behavior that we are promoting. And thanks to the internet, we're able to now get this out to people. And this is another thing that I wanted to ask you about, Lee. You've been doing this for a long time. You've had a presence online for 10, 15 years now. What are the sort of changes that you've seen in activism? Are you sort of thinking the same way that I am, that this is a total vindication of the more extreme type of activism?
Yeah, I think it's a total vindication of what we've been doing over the past couple of years. And I maybe some people don't understand my true history involved with this type of stuff, but I've actually been commentating on the internet on political issues since the mid to late 2000s. And when I first got involved with this, the big thing was talking about 9/11 conspiracies and things like that, which, you know, I fully agree that there's obviously problems with the official story of 9/11. But back during that time, that was the big thing. The internet was relatively new. It wasn't nearly as developed as we see today. There wasn't even a social media. I mean, YouTube only started like around 2005, 2006, around that time frame. There was no real social media apparatus to speak of. I mean, you had things like MySpace and whatnot, but there wasn't the ability to transmit information nearly as quickly as we see now. Even doing podcasts and posting videos, not nearly as easy back then. So you had all this conspiracy stuff that was out there that I first delved into, and there really wasn't a whole lot of discussion about racial issues. And at that time, I didn't really think it was something that would be effective to talk about. But over time, it became clear that a lot of this conspiratorial talk that I was getting into, it was kind of like we're spinning our wheels. It's like I had a vehicle stuck in some mud and we couldn't make any progress. But once we started just talking about all these racial issues and all the problems that have come about as a result of them and spoke about them in a really direct and hardcore and politically incorrect manner, that's when we started to see some real progress, because we saw how the left and the Jews and the Marxists, how they tried to respond to it with the same responses that they've used for decades upon decades, just saying, oh, well, that's a mean racist and whatnot. That's a mean bigoted person. And what ended up happening, as we see today, is that by doing that, they're just drawing more attention on the people doing it. I mean, MSNBC, this is really funny. Julia Ioffe was on there, and she's this Jew who did this piece on Melania Trump and got trolled endlessly for it. They brought her back on, and then MSNBC decided to show one of the tweets that she got sent, and it's this ridiculous image of a Back to the Future meme, only instead of saying Back to the Future, it says Back to the Oven, and it has her face on these Auschwitz prisoners, it's just so ridiculous. So by putting out all this hardcore messaging and breaking down political correctness, we could finally have an honest conversation. And I think back in the mid to late 2000s, we couldn't have a real honest conversation about anything because you had all this political correctness that was still just being shoved down everybody's throats, I should say. And so I finally came to the conclusion that, okay, in order to have an honest conversation about anything, we have to break down this political correctness. And that's when I got re-involved in this type of thing. I decided to go really hardcore on being as politically incorrect as possible. And that's something that Andrew's been doing for a while and a bunch of others. And obviously the results speak for themselves. And we've had more success in the past 2 years, I would say, than we've had in the past several decades, easily.
Well, I think humor is a big part of it. And the Jews really misunderstand white people. I think it highlights that we are so different to them. I mean, they will show an image like that tweet, and they are expecting all the goyim to be shocked and horrified that such a horrible thing has been sent to them. And we should be supporting them in wanting laws changed and people locked up for the rest of their lives for daring to joke about the Holocaust. But of course, your average white man just sees something like that and laughs and finds it funny.
Exactly.
You know, it's nice.
I mean, well, it was funny. Well, if you take a look at the MSNBC clip of Julia Ioffe, like the comments under it are like LOL at like time whatever, where it shows the image of the Back to the Oven meme. Everybody's just laughing at it, and they don't seem to get it. They don't seem to get the fact that by showing this stuff to a larger audience, it's just making people laugh even more and drawing more people to come to what we're doing and even participate in what we're doing. And it's feeding upon itself.
Well, they seem to think that the way to respond is just more of the same of what they've done before. But because of these technological improvements, we're at the same level as them now. We can produce the same technological skill in our propaganda that they have before. So it's not like we're producing stuff that looks amateur. It looks at the same level as the stuff that they are producing. And you look at some of that $1 million extreme stuff that's come out, and that's really professional comedy that is right-wing comedy. It's not Jewish comedy. It's our comedy. And it's having a massive success at bringing people to the alt-right and bringing people to our way of thinking. I was talking to fascist Lemming earlier, and he said that it was 5 years ago, it was listening to you that was a big influence on him in actually coming out and naming the Jew. So, I mean, you were having an influence back then 5 years ago, but now I believe you're having an even bigger influence, especially with sites like the Daily Stormer, which is now has as many viewers as Stormfront does. And you think that's just in the space of a couple of years, and Stormfront is what, 15 years old, 20 years old? I'm not sure how old it is, but this movement is massive, and getting mentioned by Hillary Clinton, I think, is a real crowning achievement. And Donald Trump doesn't seem to be backing down on any of the things that he's been saying. He was just in Iowa this weekend and saying on day one he's going to be deporting these illegal immigrant criminals and building the wall. He's not backing down. He's become this figurehead for the movement. Even though he's not a white nationalist, many of the things that he talks about are the sort of things that we support. And this Milo character that they are putting forward as some kind of leader of the alt-right. I heard him being interviewed the other day, and he was saying that it's all just people making these jokes. We don't take any of this seriously, and the only reason we're really joking about the Jews is because we haven't been correctly educated. We haven't been correctly educated to see them as different to everyone else.
Correctly educated. That's a good one. Well, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that, okay, you got Hollywood. Well, it seems like every person running one of these major film studios is a Jew. I mean, you have these directors and these people involved with the film studios. Most are Jewish. The media is the same way. I mean, it seems like half the people on TV are Jewish. And look at CNN. You got Wolf Blitzer, who's a Jew. You got Dana Bash, who's a Jew. You got Jake Tapper, who's a Jew. I mean, that's just CNN alone. Jeff Zucker, he's a Jew and he's running CNN. I mean, there's other Jews involved with it as well, but I mean, you get the point. It's we're not educated enough. That's absurd. Jews themselves admit that they run all these institutions. How about the Federal Reserve? It's been run by a Jew for the past 30 years. You have Janet Yellen right now. Before that, you had Ben Bernanke. Before that, you had Alan Greenspan, all Jews. I mean, you can go on and on with this. And the fact that he makes a statement like that is just so incredibly insane, because anybody who just takes a couple minutes of time to research that and take a look at who runs all these important institutions, we'll see that there is a clear overrepresentation of Jews everywhere. And it's pretty stunning when you consider the fact that, at least in the United States and in many of our countries, Jews represent a very small percentage of the domestic population. And so in the United States, it's supposed to be roughly around 2 or 3%. That's tops. And yet they have huge percentages of their people in all these important positions. So that's just a completely insane statement. And it shows that he, as a leading figure, as he's being presented, is just another one of these Jewish frauds that's being presented by the Jew-run media.
Well, the second part of his statement was saying that we weren't aware that Jews needed to be treated differently to other people. They were a different group that we weren't supposed to be joking about. So even in his statement there, he was admitting that the Jews expect to be treated differently to everyone else. Yeah, you know, without a hint of shame in him actually saying that. It was just as if that was expected and that would be accepted by everyone. And the more they come out with things like that, the less it's going to be accepted by people, and the more people are going to question just why these Jews think that they should never be able to be criticized or joked about. And you think about it, you cannot draw a caricature of a Jew. You cannot draw a caricature of a Negro. You can quite happy to do a caricature of a white man. We see the Simpsons, we see Family Guy, we see these caricatures of white people all the time. But you cannot draw a caricature of a Jew. That's offensive. Or a caricature of a Negro. That's offensive. We have these privileged groups in our societies which we are not allowed to criticize or mock. And yet all they ever seem to do is mock us and take us for fools and idiots. And I think this is another big mistake that Clinton has made and the media has made, is to characterize the people who support Trump as idiots as rednecks, because we're clearly not idiots. I mean, look at the level, the technical sophistication in the media that we have. I mean, we're clearly not idiots. We've clearly got some really intelligent people on our side, especially when you think of all these computer programmers. I mean, they're always white. You know, they're not Negroes. You don't have Negro computer programmers. Leo, I was going to move on to the next news story here. Was there anything else that you would like to comment on before we move on to that?
I think we covered it pretty good. I mean, I think this week was really important and a milestone for what we've been doing. Again, I mean, we just had a major presidential candidate, granted it's Hillary Clinton, but a major presidential candidate in the American election spent a 30-minute speech dedicated to what we are doing on the internet. And I think it's important to note that I mentioned this in one of the pieces that I did on my website, that over the past several years, I've had certain people tell me like, oh, well, what you're doing online is just a waste of time and you're not going to gain any traction. You're not going to cause any political change by doing this. And I believe what happened this week has proven that to be entirely false. What we're doing online is incredibly important, because if you take a look at the world today versus the world 10 years ago, everybody's got smartphones. Everybody communicates with one another, can post information pretty much anywhere. All these advances in technology have really empowered just the average person to put out whatever type of political point of view they want. And also the number of people who are able to view those perspectives have also multiplied with the smartphones, with everything that we see, the advances in networking, software. It's really incredible. And the advances are only going to get better and better and better. And it's only going to empower us as a block to recruit more people to our side and affect political change in a greater fashion than ever before. So I'm very happy with what happened this week. And I think this is just the beginning. We're going to see even better things happening over the next several months and several years. And we're going to take over. We're going to take over all these institutions of power, and we're going to be running the show in, I think, a much quicker time than people think.
Well, I hope so. You couldn't pay for a 30-minute advertisement on primetime television for the alt-right like that. I mean, that's what it was, pretty much. A 30-minute advertisement for us. She may have thought that she was putting people off us, but in actual fact, you know, no publicity is bad publicity. That's bound to have brought more people to our movement. So, yeah, it's great. Best current year ever, as people keep saying.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Well, I think she's got some really dumb people advising her. I don't think her people are very smart. I mean, you look at the whole illegal email server and everything and how they've gotten caught with their pants down on that. I mean, she surrounded herself with some really stupid people. And the fact that these people are presented by the Jew-run media as like these experts and these top consultants, I think it's just complete farce and complete fraud. She's not smart and her people aren't smart, because if they were, none of this stuff would be happening. I mean, their campaign manager is pushing out these ridiculous conspiracy theories about Trump and Putin and Russia. Meanwhile, Clinton has got all sorts of connections back to Russia with the Uranium One deal and the foundation and pay for play. I mean, the whole thing is insane.
Yeah, and while she's doing more of the same, thinking that it's going to work, Donald Trump is doing something completely different and taking on the editor from Breitbart as the head of his campaign, which, you know, it really is a nod to the support for traditionalist values, proper conservative values. I mean, you couldn't say that Breitbart were white nationalists or alt-right, but they're definitely a large step in the right direction, I would say. Anyway.
Well, yeah, definitely. Well, just real quick on Breitbart. I mean, it was only just a short year ago where that site was infested with Jews like Ben Shapiro and these other weirdos. And it seems like after they got rid of Shapiro, that site has taken a definite step in the right direction. They're basically just a pro-Trump website, and they're not promoting all this Jewish garbage like they were before. Because I remember a lot of us were, when we're linking to articles from Breitbart, we'd call it Kikebart as a joke, because they put out like all this weird Jewish perspectives and just this weird crap. And when Shapiro was removed from the, or I guess I forget if he quit or if he was fired, or it's probably a combination of both. But after they got rid of him, the site really went in the right direction. And that's definitely a huge positive considering the amount of viewers and readers that the site gets.
Well, it seems to be anti-immigration, anti-feminism, and it highlights black and white crime from what I've seen of it, which are all positive things to do, all positive things which help us. And this next news story, or it's a collection of news stories, really, and I'm sure they will have been there on Breitbart. And it's to do with this French burkini ban, which I'm sure people must have heard about, and people have probably found it quite confusing, really, as to why France is doing this. It seems to be a little bit extreme for them because they claim to be so liberal over there. And what's it really going to achieve? But there's quite a bit of backstory to this that people might not really be aware of. And it seems to have started in Corsica. You might remember in Corsica a month or so back, there was a big fight, including machetes and baseball bats, and it was these North Africans that were beating up on the whites in Corsica. And that was actually started by these burkinis. There was white tourists that were over there, and one of them wanted to take a picture of one of these Negroes in her burkini, because it's obviously not a sight that we're used to seeing. And just because he wanted to take this picture, this big fight started, this big riot, lots of things smashed, lots of people hospitalized. Do you recall this from the news, Lee, this goings-on in Corsica?
Yeah, it sounds vaguely familiar. I'm familiar with the agenda to push this ban on burkinis, and to me it kind of, in some ways, it conceals the real issue. I don't think women should be on the beach in Western countries dressed up in either burkas, those black bed sheets, or this burkini thing that has been going on. I mean, yeah, I guess you could put a ban on it, which is apparently what's happening in France and some other countries in Europe, but it just underscores the bigger picture of what's going on. And that's the fact that Islam is completely incompatible with Western civilization. So instead of cherry picking like various aspects of Islam and saying, well, we need to ban this because it has an association with Islam, we should just be banning it entirely and getting these people out of there. So you put a complete ban on Islam, you ban mosque, you get anybody that is associated with this out of the country, and then you won't have to deal with this. So yeah, I guess it's a step in the right direction that people are talking about this and saying that we should ban certain aspects of Islam. But to me, this doesn't go far enough. I think we need an outright ban on Islam, and there needs to be a complete wholesale rejection of this, because Islam, by its fundamental nature, is incompatible with the West. It is a philosophy, not just a religion. It's a political philosophy designed to get people of Arabic descent to conquer other peoples. It's designed to allow them to conquer the infidel. So you can't apply these concepts of freedom of religion and things like that to Islam, because by its very definition, it's intolerant towards other religions and our beliefs. So you can't have both. You can't have freedom of religion. You can't have Islam. Freedom of religion is a concept that you can only apply to people of white European descent in that context. You can't apply it to these Islamists, because a lot of them don't believe it. And the ones that say they do are oftentimes lying, because they're going to say whatever it takes to fool you into believing that they're a so-called religion of peace, when in reality, it's a religion designed, or a political philosophy, more accurately, to subjugate non-believers.
Well, I agree 100%. It's the whole of Islam that needs to be removed. But this particular ban, I think there's a little bit more nuance there to this. When I was first heard about this, I was thinking, well, I don't really care about them wearing the burqas. I really don't want them here. And I don't really approve of the way some of our young women dress in the summertime. It's provocative. It's distracting for men. So I'm really not that bothered about it. And then I put a little bit more thought to it. And I thought, well, this is a bit like somebody wearing clothes at a nudist beach. This is going to wind the people up at the nudist beach if there's somebody there with clothes on. And it seemed to me that them wearing these burqas on the beach like that is a similar situation. And then I thought, well, hang on a minute, there's more to this even yet. We've got all this ficky tarish going on. We've got all our white women being attacked by these Muslim men, and the imams are saying, well, the white women deserve it, they shouldn't be dressing like that. We've even got the mayor of Germany saying that German women are going to have to change their behavior and they shouldn't be dressing so provocatively. So I thought, well, here you've got the thesis and the antithesis. You've got the problem, reaction, solution. You've got the problem is the tarish and the ficky, and the solution that we're being presented with is this burqa, this burkini on the beach. So on the one hand, you've got the Muslim males that are molesting our women, and then you've got the Muslim women presenting the solution to them on the beach wearing these burkinis, because clearly the Islamics want to take over, as you just said, Lee, and part of that is to get our women wearing these burqas and these burkinis. So it seemed to me that it was the two of them working together, the Muslim men and the Muslim women, again, trying to force this Islam on us. So of course people are going to reject seeing these burkinis on the beach, and the women there in them are going out deliberately in them to say, well, look, if you dress like this, you won't be attacked by the Muslim men. And then after that train of thought, I thought, well, this could possibly be why these feminists don't actually attack the Muslims, because they see the Muslim females wearing the burqas and wearing the burkinis, and it's obvious from that that they view all men as rapists, and this is their defense against that, is to wear these clothes. And I thought, so possibly that might be this link that we've been looking for, that the feminists actually have with Islam, because we know that Muslims look down on feminism and look down on women thinking that they can behave like men, and yet these feminists support them. And I thought, maybe that's why, because they feel a sense of solidarity with these Muslim females, because we know that the feminists also see all men as rapists, and this clothing that these Muslim females wear is pretty much sending out exactly that same message, Lee. I don't know if that's a strange line of thought that I had, but it just seemed to me that that's what was happening here. This is why the feminists support them, and this is why it's so offensive to see these burkinis on the beach, and this is why people want to see them banned. And the solution that we've been given, or the Swedish girls have been given, to stop the Muslims from attacking them is to wear bracelets or stickers. And the Muslims that saw these young girls with these bracelets, they molested them and then took the bracelets as trophies. So the solution,
The whole bracelet thing is so stupid. I saw that story a while ago and couldn't believe that was even a serious thing. Oh yeah, I'm going to wear a bracelet, and then these Hajis aren't gonna rape or molest me. Yeah, that's real sound thinking there. But I mean, going back to what you're saying with the burkinis, I agree that it's a obvious agitation on the part of these Muslims, because they know it's gonna get a reaction. They know it's gonna piss people off. I mean, it'd be no different than a nudist going to, let's say, Saudi Arabia and walking around naked. Okay, I mean, it's that might be an extreme example, but I mean, that's kind of what we see here. It's just them agitating and behaving in a subversive manner. So, I mean, I really don't know where all this is going to go, but it leads me back to my main point that our societies and cultures are completely incompatible with one another, and there has to be a separation. Now, one other point regarding feminism. I view feminism as a Jewish-promoted ideology that is inherently anti-white male. The feminists never expose anything about what these Islamists are doing to their women. They don't care. They don't care that they dress them up in black bedsheets. They don't care what they do to them. But whenever a white male does something that is like, I don't know, just a little bit off the mark or off the color, then all of a sudden they make a big deal out of it and they say, well, that man's sexist and he's evil person. So at its heart, really, feminism is just a Jewish promoted ideology of anti-white male hatred. And if it wasn't, you would have seen them applying the same standards, not just to white men, but to black men, to Muslims. And you just don't see that. And that's because it's a ideology that is inherently against white males.
Same as Islam is against white males as well, and it just seeks to subjugate the females, impregnate the white females. But this burkini ban, I mean, the highest French court that's overturned the ban in one town, but all the mayors of the other ones have vowed to continue it. And the reason why they say they need to continue it is exactly as you just said then, Lee, is to prevent public order offences from taking place. Because it is offensive to see this. I think it just encourages the Muslims. It will encourage the male ones to go out and engage in molestation of our women, and it will encourage the female ones to put across this wearing of the burqa as a solution to that. Because the bracelets and the stickers certainly aren't going to work. And as you say, the only real way to deal with this is to remove them entirely from Europe. I mean, you really can't have half measures like this. They have to be removed completely. Well, that finishes this part that I wanted to talk about, this burkini ban. The next bit was this Colin Kaepernick, Lee. I believe your article on this was called Thoughts on Useless Negro Felon League Monkey, Colin Kaepernick. I wondered if you could tell us a bit more about him.
I only spent like a couple minutes writing this up, but this isn't really an important news story per se, but it just illustrates how we have all these different racial problems in America because of multiculturalism and race mixing. And here's what happened. You have this quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. His name is Colin Kaepernick. He's of mixed race. I think he had a black father and a white mother or something along those lines. Either way, he's a child of mixed race. And he gets paid millions of dollars to play a game for a living. Millions upon millions of dollars. I think he signed a really large contract after he brought the 49ers to the Super Bowl a few years ago, but his career has sputtered since then. And he made a conscious decision the other day during a preseason game not to stand up during the national anthem. And what happens in the United States during a sporting match, whether it's baseball, football, whatever, the tradition is that before the game starts, they play the national anthem, everybody puts their hand over their heart and they play the anthem, and it's a sign of respect for the nation. And Kaepernick decided not to stand during the anthem. He deliberately did this. And his reason for not doing this was because he thinks that the national anthem and the country itself that has afforded him to live this luxurious lifestyle, make millions upon millions of dollars for playing a stupid game. He thought that America and the national anthem was a symbol of racial oppression. And that's why he didn't stand for the national anthem. So needless to say, this pissed off a lot of people and made a lot of people very upset, and rightfully so, because here you are, you're making millions upon millions of dollars and you're saying that this is like a racist country. Meanwhile, we have a mixed race president. We have a black Homeland Security secretary. We have a black attorney general. And he's going on and on about racial oppression. And it just proves once again that nothing is ever going to be enough for these people. Nothing. Nothing will. makes millions upon millions of dollars playing a stupid game. And he's complaining about racial oppression and all this other nonsense. So if it's not enough for somebody like that, it's not going to be enough for anybody. And so I think that, in a nutshell, this event that we saw here with Colin Kaepernick, it reinforces the idea that multiculturalism is a massive failure and we need to have some sort of racial separation. And finally, also, one very important point is that it illustrates the dangers of race mixing, because what happens is that if you have a mixed race child, usually what happens is that they're going to identify with the non-white minorities or the non-white elements, because they're never going to fit in entirely with the white racial demographic. They're still going to feel a little bit outside of that because they're of mixed race. They're not a white person. So this whole situation, I think, illustrates a number of key themes, but yeah, it just illustrates that multiculturalism has been a total failure. And it's something that we have to have a real honest conversation about. I mean, I hear all these clowns, Jew-run media, talking about how, well, we have to have an honest conversation on race. Well, no, you don't. You haven't wanted to have an honest conversation about race in decades, because if you did, you'd have people with our points of view debating you about the very nature of multiculturalism. But instead, they claim that multiculturalism is this thing that we have to accept, and that if you don't accept it, then we just can't even have a discussion on it. That's just because you're mean and you're racist and you're a bigot and all these other words that they throw out there. So that's what happened with that. And it became a big news story, especially in the sporting world. And since you have a lot of these people that watch the NFL and whatnot, it became an even bigger story. So that's what happened with that. And again, I think it illustrates the many problems we have with multiculturalism.
Well, it made it all the way over here. I mean, it was on the BBC News. And it is quite incredible when somebody has been given so much that he's put on a pedestal, that is on primetime television, and then claims that he's being oppressed. I mean, the more we see of them doing this, again, the more people it brings to our side, and the more people tend to just explode with rage at the rudeness of somebody like that, after he's been given so much. And this next story is somebody like that, who is like a pressure cooker that seems to have just exploded with rage at what's actually going on. And this guy, I think, is a real hero. And this is the first I've really heard of him. I may have seen some headlines before, but not really picked up on it. But again, this made it to the main headline news on the BBC. And this is Paul LePage, the governor of Maine. I mean, this guy is just fantastic. I found this. I think this is actually from the BBC. I've got a couple of quotes here. And he says, this is Paul LePage, the governor of Maine, speaking. And he says, speaking about Maine's effort to combating drug crime, Paul LePage said that the enemy right now are people of color or people of Hispanic origin. When you go to war and the enemy dresses in red and you dress in blue, then you shoot at red, he said. LePage was asked about a statement he made in January in which he blamed the state's heroin problem on guys by the name of D-Money, Smoothie and Shifty, who come from Connecticut and New York. They come up here, they sell their heroin, then they go back home. And incidentally, half the time they impregnate a young white girl before they leave, he said. Now, I thought that was just fantastic. I mean, look at all the truth bombs in that. And then he continues. It says, speaking on Wednesday, he denied that it was racist, but said that since January, he had been putting together a binder cataloguing drug arrests in the state, and that 90%+ of those pictures in my book, and it's a three-ringed binder, are black and Hispanic people. When he was asked by reporters to provide the binder, Mr. LePage replied, let me tell you something. Black people come up the highway and they kill Mainers, and you ought to be looking into that. He then stormed off, telling the reporters, you make me so sick. Now, I thought this was fantastic. This is a governor of Maine that's telling the truth like this. Is this guy quite well known over there in America, Lee?
I didn't really hear a whole lot about him up until the Trump campaign came along, because he is, of course, a big supporter of Donald Trump, but I guess he has a history of saying a lot of politically incorrect things, but it just didn't get a ton of media attention up until now. It's gotten more media attention now. On top of the comments he made about the drug dealers and all that, which I think was very accurate. I mean, it's a fact that you have
100%.
More non-whites, blacks and Latinos, Hispanics, whatever you want to call them, who are involved in drug trafficking and a lot of these illicit activities. But one other thing he did, which I thought was really funny, which kind of drew additional attention to some of the things that he's been saying, is that there's a state legislator that apparently has been calling him a racist and all this other stuff. So he left him a voicemail and called him, forget the profanity, but he called him a cocksucker in the voicemail and dared him to release the voicemail to the media. And this is a state legislator that's been he's a communist, a Marxist, and member of the Democrat Party, and he just tweets out all this garbage that's against what LePage is doing. And so he left him that voicemail, and it got played all over the media, and it was really quite funny. So that kind of dovetailed into a lot of the statements that you just mentioned that he was talking about with the drug dealers, the blacks and the Latinos coming over and trying to impregnate white girls. These are some very politically incorrect statements that he made. And the fact that we see a sitting governor making statements like that, I think is a real positive sign, because it's showing once again that we are tearing down the barriers of political correctness. And with that, we can finally have an honest political discourse on all these issues. And you don't see how these tactics of just calling people names like racist, that tactic is not working anymore. In fact, people are just laughing at it because that's the only response they have to anything we're saying. We present facts, like Governor LePage, he presented facts about how, okay, we have a large percentage of people committing these crimes, they're non-whites. And then the response is just racist over and over again. Racist, racist, racist. Well, they've been using these tactics so long that it's almost become a parody of itself. And they don't seem to understand that these tactics aren't working anymore. So I think this is very good. The tearing down all this political correctness is opening up so many doors for us. And what's happening with this governor, Paul LePage, up in Maine, I think is a perfect example of that.
Well, the racist word came up there, and that infuriated him. There was this leftist reporter that kept saying he was racist, and he said, well, I'm not racist, you know, these are facts. And the reporter that kept calling him racist, I believe he called him up and said he wished he could go back in time when they had duels, and he would duel it to the death with him. And this got reported as well. And then when they went to him with that, he said, well, I'm not apologizing for this. This guy called me a racist. And that's the worst word that you could ever call anybody. Call them
I think he was directing that towards the legislator. There's a guy by the name of Drew Gatine who was putting out all that stuff on Twitter and whatnot. And I think that's who he was directing that to. I get your point. I mean, it's obviously the fact that he challenged him to a duel is very intriguing, to say the least.
Well, the ACLU had a response to this, and they say that they filed a Freedom of Information request for records related to the arrests of black and Hispanic people in the state. Its executive director, Allison Beyer, said Maine police were 9 times more likely to arrest people of color for selling drugs than white people. And then it says, even though white people were just as likely to commit drug offenses. Well, how do they know that?
That's a lie right there. That's a statistic lie.
Completely. Yeah, but how do they know that? Do they think that 9 times out of 10, when the police arrest a drug dealer, if he's white, they just say, "Oh, don't worry about it, take your drugs back and go"? Yeah, you know, that's just impossible. So you know, you have got a complete lie right there. And then when they try to actually come back with this, the Portland Press Herald published the FBI statistics, and it says which showed 1,211 people were arrested on charges of drug sales or manufacturing in Maine in 2014. And of course, he said in January this year, not 2014. And he wasn't talking about manufacturing. Manufacturing is methamphetamine. And that's accepted that that's a white man's thing. I mean, you couldn't see Negroes in a lab trying to manufacture something. All the Negroes do is smuggle the heroin. So they said that of these ones in 2014, not this year, 170 were black. That's 14%. And almost all the rest were white. But of course, they've manipulated the figures, haven't they?
They cherry-picked the numbers. They took a specific type of drug offense to prove their point. Whereas if you look at all the overall drug offenses, regardless of what they are, and then you factor in the percentage of each racial demographic within the population, it's clear that non-whites, particularly blacks and Latinos, they're the ones who are committing the majority of drug offenses. But again, you can use statistics, manipulate anything. And the Jewish-run media and all these other characters, they're very skilled and adept at doing this. And that's just another example where they manipulate the statistics to try to claim that multiculturalism is great and you can't say that non-whites commit more crimes. It's just, it's pure manipulation and it's very dishonest.
Well, they even admit that there. They say nine out of 10 arrests were for blacks. So they're admitting it there that nine times out of 10, it's a black guy that's doing this. But then they have to tell this lie and say that, of course, it's actually more white people that commit drug offences. But they don't provide any statistics for that whatsoever. I think this guy is a real hero, Lee. I wish we had somebody like that over here in Britain that would actually speak the truth about a black on white crime and the crimes that the blacks are actually involved in. I mean, they keep doing these reports trying to say that blacks are being stopped and searched all the time, and there's no need to actually stop and search them. And yet they're actually, they're not being stopped and searched enough because of the actual rate of them that commit these crimes.
Right. There should be racial profiling. I mean, when you take a look at the fact that you have one racial demographic that's committing a larger percentage of crimes than any other race, then obviously you should be more suspicious of that racial demographic that's doing that. And in the cases of both the UK and in the United States, you have blacks and non-whites that are doing this. I mean, this is not rocket science here. I mean, it's pretty obvious what the solution is.
Well, it's like what they're saying is, but when they say we shouldn't racial profile, what they're saying is we should ignore witness statements. We should totally ignore what the witness's description of the criminal was and go after somebody of a different race instead, as if that's likely to solve the crime. It's exactly as this governor said at the beginning there. If you've been told that the enemy is wearing red and you're wearing blue, you go after the one wearing red. You know, if you've been told that the guy that committed the crime was black, then you have to go and arrest somebody who's black or question somebody who's black. I mean, these people here that he's talking about, they were all arrested, and you're not going to arrest somebody unless you've actually got the evidence against them. They must have actually had these drugs on them when they were arrested. I just wish that we'd have somebody brave enough to step forward in Britain and speak about this. I mean, we were even being told over here that in the areas of the country that don't actually have black police officers, that they must have black police officers, regardless of the fact of whether there are any blacks that actually live in the area or not. This is how ludicrous it's become. They've got to replace all the white people with Negroes, even in the areas where there aren't any Negroes there for the Negroes to be policing. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, you see this in all different facets of society. I mean, the one in particular that drives me up a wall is in the media. And it seems like in the United States, I mean, I do a fair amount of traveling. And I take a look at the local newscaster, and then, like, they have some sort of, like, Barack Obama lookalike up there anchoring the news. Why? I mean, why do we have to have some Barack Obama lookalike anchoring the news, or some black guy or some black female? And I mean, why? Just to celebrate multiculturalism? To push this theme that has completely failed and has caused all these problems in our society? We got to push it more. And so, yeah, you see it with the police, you see it with the media. I mean, you see it with all aspects of society. And in the United States, you have these affirmative action programs, which really, if you think about it, if you think about what it is, it's really an admission saying that, okay, well, these groups of people are inferior to whites. So we have to say that, okay, well, you have to hire a certain percentage of these people because, well, they're just not as smart. They're just not as educated. They're just not as skilled as white people on average. So in order to make this multiculturalism thing work, we're going to set a mandate saying that you have to hire a certain number of these people from this racial demographic. Otherwise, there's going to be consequences. I mean, the whole thing is insane. It's incredible. Then you got all these laws that have been put in the books about racial discrimination and empowers these blacks and these other non-whites to sue if they get fired or if they don't get hired for a job. They have an opening where they can sue and just claim, well, the employer was racist, and they claim racial discrimination, and the person who was the manager, he was a bigot, and that's why I got fired. It just creates all these unnecessary problems. It's just unbelievable to me.
It's funny you should bring up the newscasters there. Just today on the BBC News, it's normally a white newsreader that they have at the weekend. And last weekend and this weekend, they've replaced her with a negress. And the negress can't even read off her teleprompter right. She's stumbling over her words. I live in a rural area of Wales, and we have the weather forecaster, and the weather woman comes on there. The weather woman is an Arab. Yeah, he switched on to the BBC, and the weatherman is someone called Stabros. Stab, for short. And that's quite an accurate name that they've given him. But this neatly brings us to this last news story. And this is somebody who, hopefully, she's not going to be even put forward for the job next year. And this is some news recently in, some very positive news. And this is about Angela Merkel. And apparently her junior partners in her coalition are refusing to endorse her as their candidate. So she may not even get put forward for election in the election next year. And at the same time as this is happening, the Alternative for Deutschland party, only 1 point below Merkel's party in Merkel's home state, and they don't even have anyone in government or in parliament, and anyone of their party. And yet they're only 1 point below hers, and she's been jet setting all off around Europe this week, and everyone has just been telling her to get stuffed, basically. So
one thing that happened is that she visited Prague, which is it's one of my favorite European cities that I've visited so far, and the Czech people over there are I can tell that they've had it with this whole Islamic garbage that she's been pushing, and they had huge anti-Merkel protest to greet her when she visited. And there was one person who actually tried to infiltrate her motorcade and was armed. And apparently this was an assassination attempt against her. Wow. So, I mean, maybe, this is just my hope, but I'm hoping that what's happening is that she's finally seeing the writing on the wall, and that if she doesn't quit, or if she maintains power for much longer, there's a distinct chance that something will probably happen to her, because she has so many political enemies at this point. It's become unsustainable for even her supporters to continue supporting her. So I think we very well could be seeing the end of Angela Merkel, and it can't come soon enough. What this woman has done to Europe has been unconscionable. She has invited in an invading army of a million plus Muslims who have gone around and have done all sorts of terrible things to the German people, not to mention the people of Europe. So it's time for her to go. And I hope this is another sign that's showing that she's lost all political support from her base and from her people, and that she'll be forced to step down or forced out one way or another. So that'll be a great day when she is finally out of political power. It can't come soon enough.
Well, it could be by next year. We could have Norbert Hofer in Austria as president by November. We could have Donald Trump as president by November. Early next year, we could have Marine Le Pen, president of France. Things are looking up. Things are looking up, Lee. Well, thank you very much for coming on once again. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with another Stormer report for you.
You are listening to Radio Area for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioArea.com.